It's podcast awards time again. So if you like what you're hearing here, please pop over to the Parsec Awards at parsecawards.com and nominate your favorite story from the last year. Or nominate another podcast.
Makeshift Stories presents Somewhere, Sometime, an irregular series of short sci-fi and fantasy stories.
Things are not always what they first appear to be. A line could just be a geometric plane seen on edge. Or a very small segment of a circle might appear to be straight. You might think that you know from the circumstances you are in how things will eventually turn out. We are ultimately limited by what we know and can perceive. But that may end up being a very small and misleading part of the whole picture. In this month's story, Mira, a successful businesswoman, has her life thrown off track by some unexpected news that changes her outlook and triggers the events which end up taking her to one of the most remote islands on the planet. There, she discovers that the situation she believes to be in is very different than the actual truth. We invite you now to sit back and relax as you listen to Makeshift Stories 101. Forever Paradise. Somewhere in some time, you might find out that you have a lot more time than you think.
Day 31. Today I found a wreck while exploring a small cove on the far side of the island. It was a mashup of weathered wood and shredded fiberglass. Judging from the brass and chromed fittings which are strewn about, I think it may have been some type of racing yacht. But the rocks and waves have all but pulverized everything except a small section of the bow, which had been thrown higher onto the shore by some rogue wave. And that is where I found it, carefully wrapped in brittle oilskin, an empty yellow diary, and an unopened box of pencils. I wonder if the owner had forgotten about it, or had her yacht been overwhelmed by an unexpected storm on the first day of its voyage, then its bones spit out onto this remote shore, with her story never being written, ironically, giving mine the opportunity. It was my first bit of good luck in the last few months. Like me, had she been on an adventure, but unlike me, didn't know it would be her last. The ocean-going part of mine had involved wine, discos, and fine dining, rather than endless days and possibly weeks on the water alone, facing the elements, overcoming fate and adversity. I, on the other hand, had given in to the fate that had been handed to me in a lab report, then chose to distract myself, partying literally like there was no tomorrow until I dropped. Had an unexpected storm and an unexpected diagnosis brought our unwritten stories together? I'm not even sure why the hungry ocean decided to spit me out at all, instead of swallowing me whole. Maybe I am just too toxic, too diseased even for it. I have been keeping track of the days by making a mark with a chalky stone on one of the larger rocks near the place I had been ejected from the water. Again, I'm not sure why. Maybe I really do want to know how much time I have left, rather than ignore it. Maybe I have seen so many marooned heroes do something similar in so many movies that it just seems natural, mandatory in fact, to do. And now, with access to an untouched diary, although pointless, after all, who is ever going to read it? I cannot resist recording my tale. The events that led me here began about 2 months ago. I had been feeling off, but had dismissed it as a side effect of a very stressful year. I had worked hard to become a director in the firm and ignored everything else, including my health, until the day I was found passed out in my office. A flurry of tests proved that I had an aggressive, inoperable cancer. I had never even taken a holiday. I went straight from business school to working overtime for 15 years. There had always been time down the road for vacations, travel, and relaxation, once I had achieved my goals. But my road had become very short, with only a limited number of tomorrows. After receiving the news, I went home, cried and raged against the unfairness of it. But finally, I came to realize that I was still alive. I had 6 months, maybe a bit more. So I sold everything, quit my job, and bought a world cruise on the most extravagant ship I could find. Then spent the nights partying my way to the end of my abbreviated journey, until one night during a storm, dangling over a rail, nauseous with seasickness, leaning out too far, possibly having consumed a bit too much wine, I fell over, plunging down into the dark, angry waters. As I dropped, I thought I saw a merperson playing in the waves. It was laughing, beckoning, inviting me into the deep, then suddenly flapped its tail and dived away. I didn't recall hitting the surface. I simply woke up here, wherever here is. Possibly I am somewhere along a vague line in the southern Indian Ocean between Australia and the coast of Africa, 1,000 kilometers north of the closest land, which I believe, if I remember the large map on the wall of the bar on the promenade deck correctly, is the uninhabited French island of St. Paul, one of the most isolated places on the planet. So I am smack in the middle of nowhere, or more accurately, if the island of St. Paul is the center of nowhere, then I'm on its edge. Regardless, I've named my island Nowhere. So no chance, I guess, of a rescue before my meter runs down. It was like the universe had played a bad joke on me twice. And initially, I decided not to play along and lay on the beach for 2 days, hoping cancer or the elements would take me before thirst eventually forced me to get up and explore my final resting place. As you can imagine, Nowhere sadly lacks people. A dance floor, a swim-up bar, fine dining, nightly entertainment, room service, and even a room. I've finally come to terms with that, but without access to my cancer drugs, I'm not sure how I will handle the pain that is coming. I was told what to expect and was given a potpourri of medicines to control it, which are still in my cabin, now on their own world cruise. I will assume that if you are reading this, you too have found yourself here, on Nowhere. So I will skip the description of the island. Needless to say, I'm lucky that it's far enough north that the climate is quite hospitable. My thirst eventually drove me inland, towards the only significant stand of trees on the island. Trees need water, I thought, and as you will have noticed, the ones on Nowhere are exceptionally lush and healthy. Oddly, I found an animal path of sorts, although I haven't seen anything larger than a mouse here. It led through the dense undergrowth to a sheltered spring, surrounded by flowers and heavily laden fruit trees. Both my water and food source in one, which I exploited hungrily and continue to do so. That was day 3. By day 20, I was beginning to feel just fine and oddly okay about my predicament. The anticipated pain from the progression of growths inside my body had not materialized, or at least not gotten worse. In fact, if anything, the chronic pain, even without the drugs, was nowhere as bad as I had been led to believe it would be. The specialist had said the cancer would progress rapidly, and I would be bedridden before I made it through one hemisphere of my world cruise. They had advised me against going, but I ignored them. Day 38. Still waiting for the pain to strike, but I am feeling fine, possibly better than a week ago, all without the aid of my drugs. And that's odd indeed. Also, I'm not starving. The berry plants and fruit trees around the island spring have provided me with a seemingly endless supply of quite flavorful meals, and the water is crisp, bright, refreshing, and almost effervescent. So Nowhere does have fine dining. It just lacks the china to serve it on. Fine things. I had surrounded myself with them. They were my reward, my way of treating myself for the long hours and sacrifices I was making. No one around me could match my drive, focus, or ambition. I did what was needed to get where I wanted to go, and I didn't let anyone or anything get in my way. Admittedly, I have left behind a messy wake of people who had been means to further my career. But instead of concerning myself with this, I was always looking for the next step up the ladder, avoiding distractions like relationships. While others played, I researched, plotted, and planned. Now marooned on Nowhere, I finally have nothing to distract me, but ironically have no career to pursue and no time remaining to do anything at all. Day 40. I was standing on the shore about a 20-minute walk from my campsite, watching the ocean. I knew the chances of a ship cruising by or a plane flying overhead was about zero. But then again, like the marking of the days, it seemed the obligatory thing a maroon person, even one who had a terminal disease, should do. I had piled rocks to form the word HELP in large block letters along the shore. As I gave up and turned inland, a movement on the path through the stand of trees which marked the location of the spring caught my eye. Maybe it was a shadow or just a sudden breeze catching the leaves, but I suddenly suspected I wasn't alone on nowhere. Apprehensive, I went to investigate, now thinking the animal path had not been worn into the ground by rabbits and flightless birds, both of which nowhere seemed to have in an abundance, few of which I had ever seen on the trail. Up to today, I had just ignored what that implied. Crouching like a spy in a movie, I crept along the path, stopping every few steps to listen. When I was just about to round the last bend in the path, I heard her singing to herself, an old, vaguely familiar tune which I could not quite place.
Mona Lisa, Mona Lisa,
she sang in a sultry contralto. Keeping absolutely quiet, I carefully peered around a dense shrub. On the far side of the spring was a young woman, tanned, muscular. She looked like an ad for a gym or a health spa. She was plucking the fruit from the trees and shoving it into one of the two hand-woven baskets that were attached at either end of a pole. Suddenly aware of my presence, she turned around and stared at me.
It's about time you noticed I lived here,
she called out cheerfully.
I would have given it another couple of days, then I was going to show up at your camp and introduce myself. But I thought if you discovered me first, it would be less of a shock.
I slowly stood up revealing myself, but still uncertain, I stayed where I was and yelled back.
Who are you? Kay Hillary, an adventurer, like yourself.
I had never considered that accidentally falling off a cruise ship and ending up being washed up on one of the most remote islands in the world qualified me as an adventurer.
Hillary?
I questioned.
No relative to the Hillary, Sir Edmund, I mean, but I would like to think just as driven. I was trying to be the first woman to circumnavigate the globe alone before ending up here on nowhere,
I completed for her.
Nowhere?
She questioned, smiled, then knelt down and picked up the pole and balanced it on her shoulders in a well-practiced motion.
Good name for the island, but I think that nowhere is a bit further south. Well, don't just stand there. Let's go and make lunch.
But, I stammered,
I have so many questions. All in good time. By the way, what's your name?
She called over her shoulder and walked off.
Mira,
I yelled after her. I followed her along the shore until we had rounded the far end of the island, then turned inland, eventually coming to her camp, nestled on the leeward side of the largest hill on nowhere. On the surface, it looked as if she had been on the island for quite some time. Her DIY shack was gray, weathered, and patched in places. The roof had recently been rethatched. Kay put the baskets down, then motioned for me to sit on a crudely made chair. She showed me how to slice the fruit and lay it out to dry in the sun. Despite my attempts at conversation, we did our work mostly in silence. I had so many questions, but Kay had no interest in answering them. Maybe she was on the island too long. Do hermits avoid talking to people? I don't know. However, she looks young. Too young to have been marooned here for years. It doesn't add up. Kay is an enigma, but an incredibly welcome addition to my limited world. Day 55. Kay convinced me to move to her camp, where she and I built a lean-to for me. Originally, she had wanted to build a shack like hers, but I insisted that it wasn't worth the time, then decided I had to explain. It was only fair for her to know about the best before date of her new cohabitant. Watching the energetic flames of a newly lit fire in the twilight of the day, I told her.
Kay, Thanks for the help, but I didn't want to spend all that energy on a shelter I wouldn't be using very long.
She laughed at me.
You're expecting to be rescued, are you? Good luck. When I first got here, I used to dream about that too. No, I'm afraid you're stuck here like me. This place is too far from the shipping lanes. Nothing is ever going to come by. You sound like you've been on nowhere for decades, but that couldn't be. How old were you when you washed up here? 6?
I questioned. Kay just shrugged and, as always, avoided saying anything specific about her past.
I fell off a cruise ship. I don't expect to be rescued, and it won't matter anyway.
I said defensively.
You told me that when we first met,
Kay reminded.
But I didn't tell you why I was on that cruise.
I paused to choose my words carefully.
4 months ago, I was a very different person. I was driven to make it to the top of my profession, and would have done, and did do, anything to get there. I worked all the time, and scorned those around me who didn't. Then the rug was pulled out from under my feet when I was diagnosed with a terminal disease, an aggressive abdominal cancer, and was given only 6 months to live. All my goals suddenly seemed futile, and work, pointless. So I decided to see the world I had ignored and party my way to my demise. Kay, I'm more than halfway through my life expectancy now. I've got maybe 90 days, 3 or 4 months. So there is no point in building me a more permanent shelter.
Puzzled, Kay looked at me, then laughed.
You really don't understand, do you? You have more time than you could imagine. How are you feeling?
She asked as if she already knew the answer.
I'm feeling a lot better than I thought I would at this point,
I had to admit reluctantly.
I see. That's what I thought,
Kay said, then leaned back against the log we had pulled up to the fire pit.
And how do you think I look, Mira? Like an old, weather-beaten, marooned sailor, ready to expire from starvation and exposure? No, you look like someone in a health club ad.
Kay giggled.
Like Jack LaLanne. Huh. Never thought I would be compared to him.
Who?
Oh, never mind. I forgot. You're probably too young.
She dismissed. Then got up and retired for the night, mumbling to herself and laughing.
I must be at least a decade or two older than you,
I groused. Day 70. I'm feeling particularly good today. There's almost no pain, and I swear the lumps in my abdomen are getting smaller. But maybe I'm just fooling myself. Kay continues to be evasive about her past. Finally, while we were gathering firewood, it dawned on me. Why hadn't I seen any smoke from her fire before I had discovered her presence? Suspicious, I confronted her.
It's the hill and the winds. My camp is on the opposite side of the inland hill, and the prevailing winds blow the smoke out to sea, so it dissipates very quickly. There is no way you could have seen any smoke. Remember, I found you, then let you discover me.
Okay, that may be so. But you've never told me how long ago you arrived here. That wreck of yours doesn't look very recent. All the wood is weathered gray, but you don't look a day past 20.
I accused, then suggested an alternate explanation.
You didn't arrive here on that wreck. You fell off a cruise ship like me.
Mira, a big city person like you might not know this, but the ocean weathers material very quickly. It's the salt. That's why boats and buildings near the water are under constant repair. A few seasons without maintenance and, well, you can see the result.
She trailed off thinking. Then an odd expression came over her face, as if she was struggling, considering what to say next. Then Kay asked me the oddest question.
Mira, when you went overboard that night, did you see anything in the water?
I don't understand how this is related to how long you've been here,
I asserted, but Kay ignored me.
Was there anything unexpected in the water? Like an unusual sea creature?
I stumbled.
How did you know that? There was a moment when I thought I saw something half human, half fish, a merperson, but it was probably just a hallucination. I must have been in the water for days before I washed up here. However I got here, I can't really remember. I think I was probably holding on to something. Some piece of debris. How else would I have made it without drowning?
Kay considered for a moment, then looked out to sea, as if she was checking to make sure no one was around.
Mira, I think you were meant to be here. You had nothing to lose. You were already dead from what you've told me. You were simply passing time until it happened. I've never told you why I decided to attempt a solo circumnavigation of the world. Yes, there would have been the fame of becoming the first woman to do it, but I had nothing to lose either. I didn't want to end up as an invalid in an iron lung. My disease would have taken years, maybe even decades, but the prognosis was equally as fatal as yours, and in the last few years, I wouldn't have had any control over my muscles. My mind would have been entombed in my body. So before that could happen, I decided to take risks, do the almost impossible. After all, I didn't have much to lose except a bleak future. So I decided not just to sail around the world, but through some of the remotest and most treacherous waters I could find. And if I didn't make it, so what? But the ocean had other plans. The storm came for me about halfway between Australia and Madagascar. It hit so fast that I didn't have time to prepare. And in the blinding rain and raging waves, I thought I saw them too. Mer people, creatures with large human eyes, long finger-like pectoral fins, and tails like a dolphin. Maybe they were just dolphins, I'm not sure. But their call was a beautiful melody, like a siren song. Then the mast came down and the pumps gave out. The yacht turtled, and I was thrown into the water, and like you, was brought here.
Brought here? When was that, Kay?
I was determined to finally get her to admit how long she had been marooned.
I don't remember hearing about any failed circumnavigation attempts in the news, and you couldn't have been the first. Didn't a woman sail around the world in the late 1980s? And you're what, in your early 20s at most? You wouldn't even have been born when that happened,
I pointed out.
The exact details are irrelevant. The point is, we were both supposed to end up here. The ocean sought us out and had its servants deliver us.
Kay insisted.
That's crazy.
No, Mira, that's what happened, and your arrival confirms it.
I didn't take Kay's assertion seriously. After all, living alone, I can imagine one's mind could conjure anything up and make you believe it, especially with the sense of euphoria that the environment here appears to impart. I'm convinced she fell off a cruise ship just like me, probably only a few months ago. The ships would all travel the same routes, and ocean currents can be very strong. That's what brought both of us here. That's what makes sense. Day 200. According to my doctors, I should have expired about 2 weeks ago. But I woke up today almost completely free of pain. Kay and I spent the morning gathering fruit and drinking water at the spring, which always looks like it has never been touched by human or animal, despite our regular foraging. We have settled into a routine, so the days tend to blend into one another now. Wasn't this what I had wanted when I set out on my world cruise? To lose my sense of time, so I would be surprised when mine finally ran out? I only know how long it had been through the number of marks on the rock. I still go back to the place where I washed up and had a new scratch every evening. I suspect that Kay must do something similar, but I have yet to discover where her makeshift calendar is. Day 300. It's been almost a year, and Kay finally told me when she arrived on Nowhere, at least when she has convinced herself it was. Like her merperson story, it's hard to believe. However improbable it is, if true, it explains why I am still alive and not consumed by cancer. When we woke up, the low clouds of an unusually large storm were threatening the horizon, so we had decided to gather supplies in case we had to hunker down for a while to let the storm blow past. We were picking fruit at the spring when Kay stopped and sat down, gesturing for me to do the same.
I have a feeling about the storm,
she hesitantly began.
It's similar to the one that brought me here. I think it's time for you to know the whole story. I'm not 25 years old.
Well,
I said,
that would seem a little old for you. You're not even 20, I bet.
And you would lose that bet, Mira. I was blown onto the island in 1953.
I was silent for a while, trying to think about how I should respond to such a ludicrous assertion.
What? Are you delusional, Kay? No. It was 66 years ago, today, and my storm has finally come back. That would make you, 91,
Kay added.
That's just simply absurd,
I objected.
Is it? Really, Mira, you are well past your expiry date, as you have obsessively noted every day for the last few weeks. So why are you still here? Aren't you feeling much better these days? And haven't the lumps gone away?
Okay, I admit that I'm not in pain, but I might just be in a temporary remission. It's just a fluke.
Mira, I can assure you that it is not a fluke.
Kay looked around the spring, then gestured with her arms.
What do you see, Mira? I'm surprised you haven't already figured it out. It's the island, the fruit, the water in the spring. Have you ever seen an old or crippled animal here?
I've never noticed,
I admitted, and in fact, I had never thought about it, but Kay was right.
That's because there aren't any. This place is...
She stopped to think.
Is a kind of paradise where nothing gets sick or ages, at least as far as I can tell.
That's hard to believe, Kay. I think our perception of things is being affected by some naturally occurring mild hallucinogen, so we need to question wild ideas like that.
I tentatively ventured, trying to be rational, but in my heart, hoped she was right. I was feeling better than I had ever felt before in my life, and it was more than euphoria. My lumps were gone.
Still, how do I know you're as old as you claim? I need proof.
Kay grabbed my diary, which I always carried with me, and flipped to the back cover.
See? Look at the publication date. You found this in the bow of my ship, right? I wasn't interested in keeping a diary, so I left it there.
I looked to where she was pointing. Her perfect fingernail underlined the date, 1949.
I don't know what this place is,
Kay began.
Maybe it is the Fountain of Youth. No one has ever found it, but I suspect I know why. There is a price to be paid for its great gift. This place needs a caretaker, and in return, it keeps you young and healthy. But you can't leave until the mer people, as you called them, recruit someone else. I've been Nowhere's caretaker for 66 years, and I haven't aged a day. I'm not the first and will not be the last. There was a man here before me, cast up by the ocean in 1884, then another person before that, and so on. And now you are here, and my storm is back. I'll never forget its dark green-gray color, the way it rolls across the water, consuming everything in its path.
Kay looked up at the trees, now bending in submission to the rising wind.
We'd better get going before it hits, Mira. It will be looking for me, so you need to take cover.
There's no way it's the same storm,
I objected, still trying to be rational.
And it certainly didn't come here just for you. That's not how weather works.
But the rational side of my brain was beginning to have doubts as I hurried to pick up my basket, feeling the first heavy raindrops begin to fall. Day 301. The storm was more intense than we had expected, and it kept me trapped inside my lean-to for the rest of the day and all last night. Its angry winds made the rain pound against the flimsy walls of my modest shelter, shaking them until I was sure they were going to tear off. I huddled in the corner furthest from the assault, but even there I got wet from the rain that made its way through the thatch. Outside, I could hear the ocean throwing itself against the shore, as if it was trying to erase the whole island, its mere existence an irritant to the water. Cold and shivering, I finally fell asleep, and when I woke up, the clouds had moved on and the sun was shining. I quickly made a fire to warm up, surprised that Kay hadn't already done that. She was usually up before me.
Kay, are you up?
I called out. But only the rhythm of the slow rollers breaking on a nearby beach answered. Thinking she may have got up early and gone foraging, I warmed myself by the fire, then went to look for her. I checked all the usual spots, but Kay was not to be found. Finally, I ended up at the site of her shipwreck. Everything had been swept away in the storm. It was as if the wreck had never been there. Day 315. It has been 2 weeks since the storm, and Kay has not shown up. She was obsessed with the idea that it had come for her. I keep going over what Kay said about her relationship to Nowhere, not really believing it, but in my heart wanting to. Maybe, as I initially suspected, it's the natural hallucinogens. They encouraged my mind to create Kay. Maybe she was never here. Day 316. I was walking along the shore close to the spot where I had first noticed Kay when the glint of something shiny caught the corner of my eye. I reached down and, wedged between two rocks, was an old pop bottle with a cork jammed into its top. All but a small part of the glass had been encased in the type of slimy green growth that things which have been in the ocean for a long time tend to accumulate. I took the bottle down to the surf and washed it off. Behind the discolored glass, I could see a rolled up piece of paper. It was a message in a bottle. Debris rarely washes up on the shores of Nowhere, so the bottle could have been in the ocean for years. Excitedly, I took it to camp, dried it out, then pried the cork out with a stick and carefully unrolled the brittle, yellowed paper. Written in a loose, scrawling hand was the following message.
January 19th, 1954. Dear Mira, I hope that this message makes its way to you. I threw it into the ocean, suspecting that somehow the currents will know where to take it. And I am confident that when it arrives, you will be healthy and well. I don't remember being washed up on a beach not far from where the storm had originally consumed my yacht. The nurse told me the story had been in the local paper, and I am a celebrity because of it. That was 6 months ago now, and on a recent follow-up visit to my doctor, I was told that there was no sign of my chronic degenerative condition. You remember, it's the reason I started out on my foolhardy adventure in the first place. A one in a million chance, a miracle, I have been told. But I know that it is a miracle from Nowhere. My payment for keeping watch over the island and its secret. Those 66 years now seem like a dream, like they never happened. As you would say, someone hit the reset button, and now I'm back where I started, with those lost years in front of me. It seems like yesterday since we last talked, but I suspect I will be very old indeed by the time this message makes its way to you. Life has been very good, and I know it will be for you too. Take care of Nowhere, and it will take care of you. Kay.
Thanks for listening to Makeshift Stories 101, Forever Paradise. We hope that you've enjoyed this month's episode. As always, if you like what we are doing, please tell your friends about us or write a review on Stitcher Radio or iTunes or check us out on Facebook or nominate us for a podcast award. We love hearing your comments, so send us an email to makeshiftstories@gmail.com or visit our website at makeshiftstories.com. And thanks to those from all over the planet who have already emailed us. We release a new story every month, approximately between the 15th and the 20th. To listen to Makeshift Stories on your iOS or Android device, please download Stitcher Radio from iTunes or the Google Play Store. This month's episode was written by Ellen V. Hare and read by Mitchell Too. The opening and closing themes were composed and recorded by David H. Makeshift Stories is released under a Creative Commons non-commercial attribution, no derivative license, which means that you're free to share our stories. Just remember to credit us and don't alter anything.